Jackson Cheney, double team, fires it to Gershner underneath. One touch pass to Eli Johnson. A two-hand jam. Cheney, a great look to Gershner. Gershner, the touch pass to Eli. Jam time for the Trojans. Meisner trying to get it in, gets it to Gershner. Gershner holds the ball, checks the clock, dribbles out the remaining time. And Beloit wins. Your final score, Beloit 47, Nemaw Central 40. For the first time since 2020 and for the 20th time in school history, the Beloit Trojan boys basketball team is headed to the state tournament.
Pretty exciting stuff on Saturday night there in Riley at Riley County High School. As the Beloit boys, as you heard, going to state, the number one seed in their sub-state, number one team in the rankings, according to the KBCA, improved to 22-1 with a win over Nemaha Central, the Thunder, 47-40, hard-fought win for Beloit, and the St. John's Tipton boys and girls also making it to the state tournament. And welcome to the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Your home for fast, friendly auto repair as we get ready for state basketball week, and certainly a great week for the North Central Activity Association, without a doubt, as four of the six schools in that league are sending their boys teams to state. So that's pretty impressive, and it's impressive that three teams or schools from Beloit are going to be at the state tournaments, with St. John sending both the girls and boys in 1A Division II, and the Beloit boys sending theirs to Hutchison. And Dusty, I'll let you kind of recap what took place in regards to sub-state action for our area team. A few that had a couple heartbreaking losses.
Yes, their Saturday, most of the teams that were playing in the area had some good days there, but it was a heartbreaking loss for Osborne on Friday night, and I'll recap that real fast as they fell in the semis of the girls' sub-state there at Mankato in Rock Hills against Clifton Clyde. 43-41 was the final in that one, and boy, it was a back-and-forth game, and Clifton Clyde had actually taken a 10-point lead, but Osborne went on a 12-0 run there in the fourth quarter, a couple big three from Levi Reiner as Osborne took a 41-39 lead, and then they had a turnover, a travel that was called with 105 remaining and about 51 seconds left. Shea Wirtz tied the game with a shot down the lane at 41, and it stayed tied until the end of the game when Shea Wirtz had a chance and missed the shot, and the long rebound went right back to her. As the buzzer was sounding, or before the buzzer sounded, that night you didn't know. There was a whistle blown and a foul was called. 1 second was put back up on the clock as Shea Wirtz went to the free throw line, missed the first one. A timeout was called by Osborne, and then she went and made the second free throw to give Clifton Clyde a 42-41 lead with 1 second left. After she made the second free throw, then a timeout was called as well. So using both timeouts, Jason Wilson wanted to set something up there with 1 second left, and then things got a little testy there at the end, and he ended up getting a technical there, and Clifton Clyde got another free throw, and one out of two from Sevi Wirtz, and they ended up winning 43-41. It was a wild finish there, one that you don't really like to see, but that's how it went down, and Osborne lost 43-41 and finished their season at 18-4. Clifton Clyde moved to 17-5 with that win, and then so Osborne was eliminated on a tough, close game on the girls' side and the boys' side then on Thursday. So that ended our coverage there at 1A Division I with Osborne falling in both of their games. So, yeah, it was definitely a tough way to go out for both Bulldog teams there at the end of last week.
All right. So I heard the end on the radio broadcast with your call, but I actually caught it right after when the Wirtz girl was going to the foul line, and she missed the first, and then Osborne called a timeout to try to ice her, and she made the second. So was the foul called before the clock expired, or did the whistle happen before the clock expired?
I felt live.
It's the whistle's the key. So.
And I've talked to two officials already about this that were out there. They called me right after the game because I know all three of them, right?
Yeah.
And so I felt live that the whistle was after the buzzer.
Okay.
I came back before I saw any video of it. I came back and I actually listened to my broadcast. You can hear the buzzer, and like a half second later you hear a whistle.
Really?
Yeah. And then on video, it's pretty clear that the buzzer came and then the whistle was right you know the buzzer's tailing, the buzzer sounds, and then the whistle comes,
and they put a second on the clock.
They put
a
full second.
There's no way it came at 1 second.
Not at all. No.
Okay. So it's a wow.
And like I say, I know all three of the guys, and I know they're all human, and I know that happens. And you've got to make a split second decision. You don't have benefit of replay to go back and look at that.
No monitor.
No, you know, red light on your backboard that can tell you what's going on either. So I get it. It's tough. I understand that. I felt from the get-go that the whistle was after the buzzer, and I think everything that I've seen and heard proves that point.
Man, but, hate to see that on the way to end
the
season.
It was a very, very overtime
if that's what you're saying is correct.
Yeah, I was pretty, you know, right when it happened, I was pretty adamant that no, this was after the buzzer sounded, and I went back and listened to my call. I was like, maybe I went too hard on that, but in the end, I really didn't, because I wasn't wrong, right? Like, it didn't feel like it was before the buzzer. So, yeah, it was a very tough way to go out. There's no doubt about that. So, I Coach Wilson was frustrated with a lot of things throughout the entire night, and I don't blame him for being upset about that. But I do credit him for, once he calmed down, he did come up and talk to me and talk about the season after the game was over. And well, it was a long season; it had to be for him.
Coaching two teams,
being the principal at the high school. Like, but man, there's some people that didn't think he'd be able to do it, but I'm gonna promise you, he did. Mm-hmm. And he had a lot of help from Coach Brush on the girls' side and Coach Baffert on the boys' side to make all that happen. There's no doubt about that. So. Yeah, that was an interesting season, obviously, for Osborne basketball, and it came up just short of sub-state championship Saturday for both the boys and the girls. All right, that was the bad news there on Friday for at least the area teams that we covered. And then Saturday came and had a lot of area teams that were fighting for a championship. Unfortunately for the Smith Center girls, they had a big lead throughout a lot of their game, but ended up losing a 54-50, a tough loss there to Hoxie, to a sub-state title game in Oakley. So Smith Center finished their season on Saturday as sub-state runner-up in 2A. And then the Ellsworth girls lost their sub-state championship in 3A, 48-39 to Haven. But like Wade said, there were
Concordia boys lost.
They lost in the 4A sub-state championship to McPherson 64-29. So those are the teams that were playing that lost on Saturday. But a lot of joy and jubilation with, as Wade said, four NCAA teams are going to the state tournament on the boys' side. Three of them will be in Class 3A at Hoisington. Ellsworth beat Haven 45-25 in the boys' championship. And Southeast Saline winning their home sub-state in Gypsum over Santa Fe Trail 57-51. And then in 2A, Sacred Heart took the Waubonsie sub-state title 52-45 over Bennington. So, again, as we already mentioned, Beloit winning their sub-state championship over Nemaha Central. So, again, four boys teams from the NCAA headed to state. And the St. John's Tipton Blue Jays, again, a 1A Division II boys and girls for the second straight year, both going to state. The boys beat Victoria 51-47 in the championship. And the girls, they dominated their game. It was close, maybe first quarter and part of the second quarter, but they pulled away for a 69-47 win over Pawnee Heights there on Saturday. So those are the scores, results, the full sub-state brackets. If you missed anything throughout the week, are all ncksports.com.
All right, and then we've got the state matchups then coming up on Wednesday, and we'll have Beloit and St. John's Tipton girls and boys. We'll have all of their games on Katy Country 94. Works out perfectly schedule-wise for us in regards to Hutchison and Great Bend. So the Beloit boys will be first up. They're the number one seed at 22-1. They'll take on the 8 seed Topeka Hayden, who is 8-15. And if you want to prove how uneducated you are in high school basketball and you say Beloit's going to easily win and you're looking at records, you don't know jack squat about high school basketball. I'm just going to tell you right now, you don't know nothing about Hayden. And I'll tell you a little bit about Hayden coming up in just a moment. I predicted this 3 weeks ago. I talked to Dusty about it. I talked to even some coaches, and I told my son, I said, if you make state, you're going to play Topeka Hayden in the first round. That's probably who you're going to get. Topeka Hayden is 8-15. They had a 12-game losing streak. Well, they must suck, right? No, they don't. They play in the Centennial League in Topeka, and 17 of their 23 games were against 5A and 6A schools. They have played one game against a 4A and lost by two. And they are 5-0 against 3A teams. They play the likes of Junction City, state-ranked 6A. Rochburn Rural, state-ranked 6A. Manhattan, who's good in 5A. They play Topeka High, Topeka West, Topeka Heights, all the big city schools there in Topeka. They are by far the smallest school in their league. They went 1-9 in league play. They've had some injuries as well on top of all. They are preseason top 10 in the KBCA. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They were 5-15 going to sub-state, and they won easily the first two games, and then they beat Sabetha, I believe it was in double overtime, on Saturday night, and that game could have gone either way at the end. I've got good friends that have players up there at Sabetha, and they said they had some chances, just didn't quite get it done. There was a questionable call in that game, from what I understand as well. Topeka Hayden's been to state 34 times in school history. Bullitt's been 20.
Mm-hmm.
Hayden has 8 state championships. All at the 4A level. They had a 3A title back in 72. They dropped from 4A to 3A this year in basketball. So it is something that is not your typical 8 seed that Bullitt's going to play. So this is what's going to happen. Mark my words. Some media outlet, okay, is going to talk about Hayden as a Cinderella. They are not Cinderella, okay? If they were 8-15 and they were a 3A school that played a whole bunch of 1As and 2As or 3As, okay, Cinderella.
Mm-hmm.
But they are not Cinderella. They are very good. This is a tough draw for Beloit. And honestly, looking at this game so far, the information I've gathered, I call it a 50-50 game.
Mm-hmm.
I really, truly would. And you may say, what do you mean? Beloit's 22-1 and Hayden's 8-15. Once again, look, this is the thing that everybody does it. Not everybody, but there are a lot of people that do this every single year when you get to state basketball tournaments and even volleyball too, but especially in basketball. When people look at the records, they look at the seeds, and they automatically say, well, that should be easy, or that's a huge underdog, or we should be cruising to the next round. Take the records, take the seeds, and shove them where the sun don't shine, because it don't mean jack squat.
No.
And I've used one example before of the Tipton girls 23-0 against Baileyville B&B, who was like 18-8 or whatever it was, and they were in the TVL, and it was Mike Tiernan versus Steve Tiernan, father versus son, head coaches. And going to that game, I thought it was a 50-50 game, and then Baileyville B&B won. It was a really good game. And then, of course, what do I read in the paper? What do I read on... Big upset, 8-1. No, it wasn't. If you knew anything about basketball and knew the schedules that both teams played, and if you even talked to the coaches themselves, and Mike Tiernan knew that it was going to be a tough, tough game, okay, the seeds meant nothing. The record means nothing. You have to look at who you have played, all right? Who have you played? And if you have a super PUD schedule, and you get the state, and you go up against a team that's had a really tough schedule, you will be exposed very quickly. We've seen this volleyball many times. It's happened in basketball before. All right, if you've had some weak regionals or sub-state play, where you had a pretty easy path to a state tournament, and other teams had to fight their way through against some really good teams and almost play like a state tournament in sub-state, guess what? The team that had the easier path, odds are, is going to get exposed. Because this isn't about wins and losses. That's how they seed it. It's about matchups, okay? Same thing in the NCAA tournament. We're getting to that point now. I mean, you got 16s beating ones twice now. It isn't about the seed. It helps that you're a higher seed, usually. In high school basketball, I don't think it really helps you a ton. Usually, if you're the one seed, you get an easier matchup as an 8 seed. And Beloit does not have that here, okay? Now, having said that, can Beloit beat Hayden? Hell yeah, they can beat Hayden. I mean, is Hayden a juggernaut? No, they're not a juggernaut. They've had some juggernauts during their history, that's for sure. They went to state, what was it, 8 straight years? They've been to 12 state title games. They went 14 out of 16 years and all at the 4A level during that stretch. So they're a very good team. But Sabetha nearly beat them, and Beloit beat Sabetha, I know it was Summer League, up in a Marysville tournament. So if Beloit plays their best ball, can they beat Hayden? Absolutely. If Beloit plays an A-minus game, can they win? It's very possible. They could play a B game and they might win. I don't know how well Hayden's going to play. I haven't seen them play yet. I have gotten all kinds of scouting reports and information, and I've got this and that on them. And I know that it's going to be your non-typical 1 versus your 8, which I predicted 3 weeks ago. And Cheney's got the best draw. and they're the two. They get Southeast Saline. And if Sabetha would have won the other night, Beloit would have faced Southeast Saline in the first round of the state tournament and would have been the third meeting of the year. And people are like, I'd be scared of playing Southeast Saline a third time. I'd rather play Southeast a third time, personally, than anybody else in this bracket. I mean, of all the teams I had to pick, I would pick Southeast as who I'd want to play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not trying to say Southeast is bad. It's just that Beloit's familiar with them. They beat them by 20-some last time. The first time it was a dogfight early in the year by 4. Would it be a grinder like Nemaha Central? Probably. Probably so. Yeah, I think it probably would be. But I tell you, I look at this 3A field, and it is really good. And what's crazy is many times I've seen 3A where you have undefeated teams and you have coin flips with one-loss teams. Beloit's and Cheney are the only two teams with two losses or less. Beloit's 22-1. They're the one. They'll take on Hayden 8-15. Once again, throw the record out the window. If Beloit wins on Wednesday at 2 o'clock, which we'll have pregame at 1:40 on Katie Kunch 94 and katiekunch94.com, they will take on either Wellsville or Ellsworth, and that would be a third meeting between Beloit and Ellsworth. Beloit's won both meetings this year. Cheney's a 2-seed, and I've had people tell me they are the team to beat. People that have seen Cheney say, of course, I'm like, have you seen Beloit play? But I think a lot of people think Beloit and Cheney are the two top teams, and they are seeded that way. But Cheney has the most favorable first-round matchup of all the seeds as they take on Southeast Saline. Now, watch Southeast go out and pull off a major stunner and then prove me wrong. And then Goodland is, I saw them in person. They're legit. I mean, they're really good. They got size, athleticism. They got a couple of shooters. They got a very good point guard. Goodland is legit, and they'll play Riverton in the first round, who beat Girard after losing to Girard twice during the regular season. So, you know, this field is stacked. Goodland won the coin flip, so they're the 3. Wellsville's the 4. Wellsville, I've looked at their schedule. They've beaten some good teams. So this is not going to be an easy path to a state title for Beloit. If you're sitting there and you've just jumped on the bandwagon and you're now part of the Beloit Trojan train, which I know a few people texted me all of a sudden wanting all kind of information on the opposing team, and they've never talked to me during the entire basketball season. So welcome aboard the Choo Choo Express, all right? Just like the Chiefs bandwagon, you're welcome. There's plenty of room. You'll have to sit and coach. First class is occupied, but I'll be happy to help drive it. We got really strong steel ironclad axles, and we can carry as many people as possible. But realize that whoever wins the state tournament, but there's no doubt if Beloit wins their first ever state championship, they will have earned it because yeah. Hayden is a non-typical 8 seed. Then Wellsville or Ellsworth, you have to beat Ellsworth a third time. Wellsville is legit from what I've been told. And then I think they're going to have to play either Cheney or Goodland in the championship. And I've seen Goodland, and I know Cheney. My God, Cheney won football 2 times. They won over Andale this year. They won the state football title. They've got athletes.
No doubt. Yeah.
And they're good in everything. Girls sports, boys sports. So Cheney's legitimate. Beat Collegiate by 10. And I've been told Collegiate was really good. So listen, there was talk that there's going to be 3 private schools, Heritage Christian, Collegiate, and Hayden. Well, only one of the private schools made it. There's 3 NCAA schools that made it, and all 3 have tough draws, no doubt about it, no doubt. Southeast is probably the biggest underdog of all of them. So if Beloit's going to win a state title, they're going to have to beat Hayden. They might have to beat Wellsville or Ellsworth for a third time, and then have to beat either Cheney or Goodland would be my prediction out of the bottom half of the bracket. And that means you have to earn it. And you know what? That's how it's supposed to be. Yeah, you know, I'm not sitting here telling you all this stuff to feel sorry for anybody. No, this is how it's supposed to be. To win a state title, it's supposed to be tough. You know, winning a sub-state championship game is supposed to be tough. Okay, some cases it isn't, but it's supposed to be tough to get the state. Now, some people have some of the easier paths to get the state. Maybe it's not so tough, but then they find out it's a tough path once they get the state.
Mm-hmm.
No matter when the tough path begins, it is difficult to win a state championship. And at the end of the day, everybody in every class except for one team in each class will be highly disappointed and bummed that they are done. Whether it's Osborne, as we said the other night, in a sub-state semifinal, whether it's the Beloit girls losing on a buzzer beater in the first round of sub-state, whether it's a first-round state tournament loss, a state semifinal, a state championship game, it hurts tremendously. Because you work so hard to get where you are, and then your season is over. And for the seniors, of course, your career is over. So that 3A bracket's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. Hayden's got guards that are very good, from what I hear. They're not particularly tall, but they're very quick and athletic. They don't have as much size as Beloit. So you know, that could help Beloit. But, yeah, it's going to be a tough game. Beloit against Topeka Hayden, 140 pregame on Katie Country 94 and katiecountry94.com. In Class 3A, girls, Silver Lake is the number one seed, 23-0. They'll take on Haven. Heritage Christian is the 4 seed, taking on Hayden, the 5 seed. So two private schools there playing each other. Goodland against Girard. Goodland girls just reloaded this year. After all the talent they lost, dear Lord. Mm-hmm. And the Heston girls are taking on Cheney. There's Cheney again. I told you, Cheney's good in everything. And they have been for a while. That's 3A. You can look up 2A. I don't have it in front of me. Now let's go to 1A Division II boys, Dusty. St. John's Tipton boys, they got a tough draw they will take on Axtell. So Axtell won the coin flip. It would have helped St. John's Tipton and Northern Valley won that coin flip, no doubt. Once again, if you're going to win state, no matter when you play them, you got to beat them. So whether it's the first round, the semis, or the state title game, in order to be the best, you got to beat the best, right? And so St. John's Tipton has a tough draw. They'll take on Axtell, who's 21-2. That'll be at 6 o'clock from Great Bend at Barton Community College. Dusty have the call with pregame at 5:40 on Katie Country 94 and katiecountry94.com. If the Blue Jays pull off the big upset, then they would play the Northern Valley Alebo, which is the 3-6 matchup. Dighton and Marmaton Valley is the 1-8, and Cunningham and Buckland is the 4-5. I don't know a lot about Dighton, but I'm looking at this bracket and I'm going, the bottom half seems to be a little tougher than the top half. But that's just I don't know Dighton enough. So,
yeah, I would. I 100% agree with that. Even, you know, I think St. John's Tipton might very well be better than like a Cunningham or a Buckland. I don't know. I'm not 100% sure.
Well, Marmaton Valley's 11-11.
Yeah, Marmaton Valley for sure is the. I really feel like they're probably even. Even though you look at brackets sometimes and you don't want to say, like, right. The record doesn't indicate what they are. I think that probably does for Marmaton Valley here in Division II. I'm not 100% sure. Like, I've not had a chance to dive into the top teams on this bracket, but all four of the bottom teams were either at state last year or I've seen them at state, and I know kind of what their potential is. St. John's Tipton actually beat Northern Valley in the sub-state championship last year to get to state, so... Mm-hmm. You know that they're a solid team, but this is 2 years in a row where St. John's Tipton's had a pretty tough draw in the first round. Last year they got Lebo, and you knew with the athleticism and talent that they had that was going to be a very, very tough game, and it was. And when you're kind of looking at and I don't always do comparative score stuff, but when you're just looking at the past, you know, you brought up the brackets and the records and things like that a little bit ago. You said there's examples of Tipton and B&B of this and that. There's an example on Thursday of last week with Osborne having one loss and Frankfort having 10.
Yeah.
And now you're flipping that around with the TVL team that has two losses mm-hmm. and the MPL team that has 7. Mm-hmm. Who do you think's the favorite in that game? Oh. It's not hard to figure it out. Right. Axtell's so athletic. They've got you talked about Cheney too. Like Axtell boys seem to be everywhere right mm-hmm. now, right? Like they're so talented and athletic and they're well coached. And I'm not saying that St. John's Tipton is not talented, athletic and well coached, but St. John's Tipton would be one Northern Plains League team that focuses a lot on who they schedule in the regular season to try to get them prepared for this time of year. I will say that. You know, they go out and find a Sacred Heart. They go out and find Clifton Clyde and put it on the schedule. They add another game with Osborne to try to make them better. So they're one of the better teams that's equipped to make it into the state tournament and compete at the state tournament with some of these teams because they're ready for it from that aspect. But sometimes talent's going to just be much better than yours, and it's going to be an uphill climb. And this is what St. John's Tipton has. I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer on your Monday, but this is going to be a battle. And they no doubt would have rather played Northern Valley in this first round game. Yeah. I've not talked to Coach Bergman, but I don't really need to.
I think it's the worst possible draw.
I think Lebo. I would put Lebo as a favorite against Northern Valley in the 3-6 matchup. So Lebo's got 7 losses, but the Lyon County League is very similar to the Twin Valley League, mm-hmm. right? They're teams that are always at state from that league, and they always seem to have 5, 6, 7 losses. You know, some of the years you get a Lebo like last year that didn't have that many losses, but they were just that good. And so, you know, those teams down on the bottom are going to be fully prepared and ready to go at state. But the Twin Valley League and Lyon County League teams are definitely going to be the favorites just because of who they've seen and what they are and who they play and how they're prepared to go and just the athleticism that they have. So, yeah, bottom side of the bracket is definitely better than the top for me in that bracket.
And just to give you an example, we're talking about with records. So, Lebo's 16-7, Northern Valley's 21-2. That's not an upset if Leawa beats Northern
Absolutely
Valley.
Absolutely not.
St. John's Tipton's 14-7, Axtell's 21-2. It would be an upset if St. John's Tipton beat Axtell.
Yes.
And you may say, well, what do you mean? You just talked about one team with seven losses not being an upset and the other with seven losses being an upset. Well, once again, it's about who you're playing and the matchups and leagues you're from and the strength of schedule and the opponents you played and so forth and so on. Dighton-Marmonton Valley is the 1-8 matchup, and then Cunningham and Buckland is the 4-5. Dighton is 22-1. So once again, St. John's Tipton boys will play at 6 o'clock Wednesday. Pregame at 5:40 from Great Bend. Dust will have the call there. The girls Class 1A Division II State Championship Tournament takes place at Great Bend as well. That'll start on Thursday. South Haven is the 1 seed at 21-2. We'll take on Northern Valley 12-11. And then Buckland, the 4 seed, 20-3. Will take Hanover at the 5 at 20-4. I know who I'm picking in both those games. Lebo against Meredithine Valley. I know who I'm picking this one as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
And then I tell you what. Now, I will
the girls
say.
Girls got the good draw.
I'm going to say the girls of St. John's Tipton, the Lady Blue Jays got the way better draw than the boys did. Because if you had to pick all the teams they had to play, there might be one or two others. But in regards to the how it's seeded here, they getting Sharon Springs instead of Lebo is much better. I don't know a lot about Sharon Springs. Sharon Springs 20-3. St. John's Tipton girls are 16-5, and they cruise to a sub-state championship out at Stafford. They'll play at 8 o'clock on Thursday, pregame at 7:40. It'll be the only game we have on the radio on Thursday because the St. John's Tipton boys will play on Wednesday, and Dust will have the call on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com. Get the free KD Country 94 app on your smartphones. We are not allowed to stream, by the way, if you're wondering about that. Long story. There was a state bill that was passed, and then Keisha somehow mysteriously renewed an automatic renewal clause in an NFHS contract that has allowed them to. It's still there's interpretation. There's lawyers going back and forth. Let me put it that way on both the KAB side and the Keisha side as to does this even enforceable? This renewal of a contract that was the exclusive contract for streaming for postseason play between Keisha and NFHS. I won't get any more than that. But anyway, as of now, even though there's a state bill, but now there's the confusion with that contract. As of now, we are not allowed to stream anything statewide. So if you're a Beloit fan going, well, that sucks, it does. It does. You will pay now instead of not paying to watch a broadcast that probably will have mispronounced names, will not know your team that well. It might be better than it used to be. I hope it is. I'd rather you listen to the radio. You know what? I'd rather you go to Hutch. I'd rather you go to Great
definitely.
Bend. I'd rather you go to Great Bend or Hutch and spend more money than watching the video stream. Honestly, so you're there to support, be loud and proud. But if you can't, there is a fee that you have to pay NFHS. And by the way, that money does go out of the Keisha gets their cut, and then the rest of that money goes out of the state. If you didn't know, so
yes.
And the quality of the NFHS, everybody knows by now, isn't the greatest. Perhaps it'll be good at the site that you're going to buy the subscription from for 11, 12, 15 bucks, whatever it is now. So we're not allowed to stream. Maybe that'll change in the future, but for this year, we're not. But back to the St. John's Tipton girls. Like I said, favorable draw for them.
Yeah.
At least first round.
I did Wallace County last year. Hanover played them in the first round, so I kind of know a little bit about them. I don't know, remember all their names and everything like that, but they were obviously a team that earned their spot, and Hanover's not a good judge of for last year of who they really were. But I like that. I think this is a favorable matchup for St. John's Tipton. I think that they can compete with them size wise. I think they will have a big post. Wallace County will, if I remember correctly. But I think. Pound for pound and everything that they do, I think they're going to compete in this game. Buckland would have been the coin flip, would have been the other possible matchup here, and they played Buckland last year. St. John's Tipton did in the third place game and lost by 5. So it's a team that would know them, and they would know, and sometimes that's a benefit, sometimes that's not. So I really think going into state, it's fun to play a team that doesn't really know you off the bat. Mm-hmm. And maybe you haven't played them ever before, and you got to learn about them. And that's where, coaching and adjustments. And if it's an even matchup can really come out and show how well prepared you are for a state tournament like this. And I think that's going to be the case on Thursday for the Lady Jays. This is going to be a game where they can, I think, compete with Wallace County, Sharon Springs. And I do. I like the matchup. Now I don't like, the part of the bracket that they're on, if they win, to try to win a state championship, that's going to be very, very tough no matter what. You know, and Hanover's up at the top of that bracket as the 5 seed and might be a favorite going in. Mm-hmm. Who knows? But I think this is a more balanced bracket than the boys, I will say that, as far as the talent and where the better teams lie. But I do. I like the matchup for St. John's Tipton, and I think if they come out and play the way they played here recently, they have a very, very good chance of making it to the next round.
So if the St. John's Tipton girls win on Wednesday at 8 o'clock, they will play Friday at 8 o'clock against the Lebo Meredosine winner. If they lose, they are done for the season. St. John's Tipton boys, if they can pull off the upset against Axtell, would play Friday, and that would be at 6 o'clock against either Northern Valley or Lebo. The Beloit boys, if they knock off Hayden on Wednesday at 2 o'clock, they would then play on Friday in the state semifinals at 2 o'clock against either Wellsville or Ellsworth. So best of luck to the Blue Jays girls and boys and to the Beloit Trojan boys as well. In regards to Class 1A Division 1 girls state bracket, Little River undefeated 23-0 take on Opie. Norwich is a 4 seed at 22. Norwich is a 4 seed at 21-1. They take on Centralia. What a tough draw. Norwich has got the shaft on both of those things, didn't they? 21-1, and you get Centralia first round.
Yeah.
Centralia 21-2. South Gray 22-1 takes on Rollins County. And St. John Hudson takes on Frankfort 22-1 versus 20-3. That is the old school 1A combined loaded bracket when you look at records.
Yeah, D1. Man, that's a tough tournament, and you don't see them a lot like that anymore with the split, and that is a very tough tournament.
Definitely.
You get to tell me Centralia and Frankfort both in that bracket that are outstanding teams.
Boys bracket, 1A Division 1, South Gray 21-2. The 1 seed will take on Canton Galvez 12-11, who upset Solomon, hit a 3-pointer at the buzzer, sent in overtime and won. Clifton Clyde 20-3 will take on Opie 20-3. These games on Wednesday. La Crosse 20-2 against Bishop Seabury Academy. Quinter is 20-3. The 3 seed take on Burden Central. That's a look at 1A. 2A girls, Hoxie, of course, knocking off Smith Center. They are 22-1, and Hoxie's a 4 seed. And they'll take on the 21-2 Riverside team. The 1 seed, Wichita County, 23-0 against Valley Heights, who's 18-5. And let me tell you something, Valley Heights plays on the TVL. Don't be shocked. That's a tough 8 seed to deal with as an undefeated 1 seed. Pittsburgh Colgan, 23-0 against Eureka. I'm going to tell you, that's going to be a tough game for Colgan because Eureka, they have been 3A. They dropped 2A and then Hillsborough 22-1 against Wichita Independent 19-3. That's a pretty stacked 2A girls bracket. We told you 3A, and then if you want to look at 4A, 5A, and 6A, go ahead, go to Acacia.org and CKSSports.com. We have all the brackets posted there for you. So once again, we'll have coverage of the Beloit boys on Wednesday, the St. John's Tipton boys on Wednesday, and the St. John's Tipton girls on Thursday. And if they win, we'll continue to follow them. All the games will be on Katy Country 94 and KatyCountry94.com. And you can see the whole schedule, broadcast schedule, ncksports.com. Anything else you want to add about high school hoops?
No, I think we got it covered. Looking forward to another week here.
Yeah, hopefully it's more than just a one-day type of thing, right? And of course, you got 2 days no matter what. Coming up in 30 seconds, what's wrong with the Jayhawks?
I'm Elijah at Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. You depend on your vehicle every day to get you where you need to go. The best way to keep it ready and avoid breakdowns is through proper maintenance. Whether it's oil, fluids, filters, spark plugs, belts, hoses, or brakes, we can help. Give yourself the peace of mind of knowing your vehicle is ready to go. For fast, friendly vehicle maintenance, call Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Find us just south of the courthouse or on the web at KieferBrothers.com.
Hunter with the three.
Got it! And not done just yet as Hunter hits the three. Baylor had a chance to push it to 10.
Well, Baylor does win, though. KU loses 82-74 at number 15, Baylor. It was a tight game in the second half. Baylor won a 13-2 run, about a four-minute stretch where everything went wrong for KU. KU got 20 points from Dickinson, and Kevin McCullough is back in the lineup for the first time in 2 weeks, struggling from three, but it looked not too bad, though. 9 of 19 from the floor, and if he can play the rest of the way, that makes KU a different team. KU now 21-8. It's the most conference losses for a Bill Self-coached KU team since he's been the head coach at KU. Not 7 league losses, 9-7. Baylor improves at 21-8, 10-6. And if the season ended today, KU would be the 6th seed in the Big 12 tournament. It would have to play on Wednesday. they're used to always playing just a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They'd have to play on Wednesday. Of course, the tournament will start on Tuesday because you have 14 teams now, both on the men's and women's side of things. And Bill Self acknowledged the 13-2 run in the second half.
Dennis and Nunn, I don't know exactly how the points went. Went nuts, and then Missy killed us on the short roll a couple of times, in which we didn't guard it at all. And then we had a couple of really bad offensive possessions, cross-court passes, which lead to runouts. You know, we obviously just had a bad stretch. And when you're playing a good team on the road, you know, you can't afford to have a four-minute bad stretch like that.
Kansas loses, and they will play K-State tomorrow. 7:30 is the pregame on Z96.3 The Lake, and we'll find out if McCullough plays or not. It's kind of been up in the air all the time. Went from, I don't know if he's going to play this year, the rest of the year, to boom, he plays on Saturday against Baylor. And like I said, he looked pretty good. So KU, K-State, KU's won like 34 or 40 senior nights in a row, something like that. It's crazy. So the odds are against K-State in this situation. And speaking of K-State, they had a tough loss on the road in Cincinnati.
Lukosius off the curl for three. Lukosius hits it! 10.6 to go!
And that was the final dagger. Cincinnati winning 74-72 over K-State Saturday night. K-State rallied from a 13-point deficit, led with a minute 16 to go on a Tyler Perry three-pointer, 72-71. But that three there by the Bearcats ended up winning the ball game. K-State had a few possessions, a couple of chances, a missed three by Perry. Perry turned the ball over with 2 seconds left, and after a missed free throw by Cincinnati, K-State had a rebound and a timeout. North of Kaluma's pass went out of bounds as time expired. Perry had a big game, 26 points on just 10 shots, 6 of 8 from 3, 6 of 6 from the foul line. That's efficient. K-State 17-12, 7-9 in the Big 12. Cincinnati keeps their slim NCAA tournament hopes alive at 17-12, 6-10 in conference. Jerome Tang on the tough loss on the road.
Every night it's like this, and it's tough when you're on the short end of it. Hats off to Cincinnati. They did a great job, you know, for most of the game. And then, you know, when they gave up the lead, they could have stopped, but they didn't. They made a big play, and that's what happens in this league. Players make plays.
Jerome Tang also said after the game, he said, everything is in front of us. And what he means by that is, he goes, you know, we, as of the rankings last week, I think Kansas should fall out of the top 10. But he was saying that we got two top 10 games, and if we win them both, we should be in. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, that would put you at 9-9 in conference. That would put you at 19-12 overall. It would give you two top 10 wins at, you know, towards the end of the season. I'd get the committee's attention. If you could win at Kansas and sweep them on the season series and then beat Iowa State at home, that would look, and Iowa State probably going to finish second in this conference, that would look pretty impressive. And Jerome Tang may be very well right that their tournament starts tomorrow night in Lawrence. If they can beat KU, which, of course, K-State fans are going to give them no chance to win, just like they didn't give much of a chance back in Manhattan, especially in Lawrence. But if K-State could pull off the upset tomorrow night in Lawrence, then you're at home senior night against Iowa State. They play better at home than on the road, just like every other team in the Big 12. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden you're at 9-9. So is it a costly loss against Cincinnati? Yes and no, because of what Jerome Tang said. We still have two big-time opportunities. And, of course, you still have the Big 12 tournament to make a run, too. And now if K-State loses the next two games, perhaps they will slide far enough to where they don't even get the first day off. They could end up be playing. They could play the all 5 days if they had to win a tournament championship in Kansas City. So you don't seem too hopeful at all. You haven't been all year long.
I mean,
do you think K-State could beat KU tomorrow night?
I've said since TCU, this is not a team that's going to make the tournament. Yeah. Since they lost to TCU at home.
Do you think they have a chance to beat KU tomorrow night?
I never say they don't have a chance. Their chance is way less than it was the first time the two teams played. And so I felt not pessimistic about that first game, right? I feel very pessimistic about this game. With KU's record on senior day, with the fact they already lost to K-State once.
Mm-hmm. Coming off a loss,
and Bill Self doesn't lose two in a row at home. Like, when's the last time that's ever happened?
Yeah.
And so
the odds,
you know,
are against
you. You're on three in a row overall, but you're on two in a row at home if K-State would win this. And there's not a lot. And it seems like every time they go on the road, they build at least a 10-point deficit.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that in Allen Fieldhouse. I'm going to promise you that. And so there's just so much going against them going into this game that again, I'm not a person that says they don't ever have a chance, but the chance is very small for this one, in my opinion.
I know KU lost to Baylor, but I actually thought there were some positives to take out of that game for KU. One, you get McCullough back, and, I mean, for takeaway, I know take anything away, but honestly, they were right there at Baylor toe-to-toe with them. They had about a 3 to 4 minute stretch. That's what killed them. And there was one time in the first half he put in three of his bench players, and then it was like a quick run. And once again, they have no room for error, no doubt, because they don't have much after the starting five. KU K-State tomorrow night on Z96.3 The Lake. Number one, Houston slipped past Oklahoma in a crazy ending in that game in Norman, 87-85. So Houston's 13-3 in conference. Iowa State kept pace. They are 12-4, game behind, as they are ranked eighth. They win at Central Florida, 60-52. Texas won at home over Oklahoma State, 81-65. Texas Tech won at West Virginia, 81-70. And BYU beat TCU, 87-75. K-State and KU women had their final games of the regular season. K-State women jump out to a 36-17 halftime lead. They rolled to a huge win in Lubbock over Texas Tech, 73-49. Serena Sundell, Gabby Gregory each with 13. K-State goes in the Big 12 tournament at 24-6, finished third in the Big 12. KU looks as though they locked up a spot in the NCAA tournament. KU women are red hot. They won 9 of the last 11. They knocked off the conference champion, number 20, Oklahoma, 83-74 on senior night in Lawrence on Saturday. KU now 18-11 going into the tournament, and it looks like they will probably make it into the big dance. Also in women's college basketball, Iowa's Caitlin Clark needed 18 points to pass Pistol Pete Maravich for the most points in NCAA Division I history. On the men's or women's side, she passed the mark in the first half, and she finished with 35 points on the night. And number six, Iowa's 93-83 win over number two, Ohio State. Clark now has 3,685 points in her career heading into the Big Ten tournament. So she has a chance to add many more points to that total. And this is just to give you an idea of how people can shove their narrative and use numbers to their advantage. Let me give an example in favor of Caitlin Clark versus Pistol Pete and in favor of Pistol Pete versus Caitlin Clark. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's convenient when people make the argument but leave out both parts of this.
Mm-hmm.
Caitlin Clark gets the all-time record in scoring points, and the Pistol Pete supporters immediately throw out, Pistol Pete did it in less games, his points, and he didn't have a three-point line. And you're like, wow, okay, well, that makes total sense. Then you see how many field goal attempts Pistol Pete had to get to his points. Caitlin Clark has way fewer field goal attempts than Pistol Pete to get to her points as Pistol Pete did. Pistol Pete shot the ball even more than Caitlin Clark did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would he have more points, a three-point line? Yeah, probably. At the same time, it doesn't change how many shots he took.
No.
So it is interesting. The supporter for Caitlin Clark says, well, Pistol Pete took like 700 more shots to get to his points. And the supporter Pistol Pete says, well, he had less games. Well, if you take way more shots every game, the amount of games shouldn't matter in the equation. And then you say, well, what about the three-point line? Well, he still would have had that many shots. The thing is, he had three-point line. I hear the argument, well, he would have another 500 points or 300 points or whatever it might be. I don't know how many threes he would have made. He was an amazing player, no doubt. And obviously, two different genders, two different types of basketball back then and now. And you know, obviously, a three-point line now and wasn't then. But I'm just like, how about we just enjoy this and let Caitlin Clark have her due? You know, I said it, she didn't have the all-time record till she got past Lynette Woodard. She did, and we said she would, and now she's past Pistol Pete. She's an amazing talent, and you've got big-time stars now attending college women's basketball games in Iowa, and you've got Gus Johnson calling the action, number one play-by-play for Fox. If that doesn't tell you that's big time, I don't know what else does. Caitlin Clark has been, whether you like her, hate her, tired of her, it doesn't matter, or love her, she has been absolutely tremendous and has done more for the college women's game than maybe any other player in its history. I said maybe.
Yeah, I tell you, I will say right now, I'd rather have a discussion about Caitlin Clark with this Pistol Pete Maravich record than that dude that came back to Detroit last year for like a seventh season that almost came close to breaking the NCAA men's Division I record, right?
Right, yeah.
I was just like, that one was like, dude, just go home. You've had your opportunities here. But Caitlin Clark obviously has put in the time and the effort, and you know, whether she's played more games. I mean, you can quantify the amount of extra points she has because of a three-point line. That's pretty easy to do, right?
Sure.
But you can't do that with Pistol Pete. You don't have every film of where he shot the ball from. Would it have been a three?
Right.
And everybody would have to go analyze all that to know how many more points he would have had there been a three-point line. So, but, yeah, I'm not – yeah, I see those discussions, and I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
If somebody says you need to put an asterisk by it,
no,
and I'm like, no, you don't, because it's not even a real record. Like, they're not going to be putting this in a record book next to each other. I don't believe anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, usually everything like that is separated with women's and men's, and there's really not like a – I don't think there's a record book, the NCAA, that has a list of all-time scoring
most
in Division
I
for men and women put
right.
together.
Right.
I don't. I've never seen that.
Never
so
seen that
I think you just need to relax. It's just a point of talking, right? It's just an anecdote. It is really an asterisk just to talk about it, to be completely honest with you, because they're not going against each other for records.
No.
It's just a record that Caitlin Clark has. I mean, everybody talk about, you know, women's basketball coaches jumping Coach K.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that,
right.
that's been the talk, you know, lately a couple times. And so those don't go into any real record book, but they've got the wins and the credit for those, and they've done the things to get those wins as coaches too. So there's a lot of things that I've seen that were like, well, I don't know if we really need to be comparing those things, because they're, like you said, different sports,
yeah.
different eras, different times, different ways the game's played, different gender, 100%.
Yeah.
And so it's all relative to me. I'm not going to get into an
yeah.
argument on
not
social
me neither.
Media about
no.
she should have an asterisk next to her name because
no.
she had a three-point line and played 35 to 40 games instead of 25 to 30 in a year.
Well, then you have to have separate record books without the three-point line, with
yeah.
the three-point line. And then the three-point line has been moved back
as well. And
believe
me, people want to do that, you know, with a lot of the records that have been set nowadays because there's more games, there's more advantages for the offense, whatever there might be. People want to do that right now.
Oh,
and
yeah.
obviously people do that with Barry Bonds, whether you believe or not that he cheated or whatever.
Right.
People do that. Like they're like, oh, he's not the real home run king. Well, the record book says he is.
Yep. And nobody took away his home
runs.
And
you might hate it and dislike it and, like everybody else, know that he has
right.
cheated.
Right.
So did most everybody that has a home run record from that era.
Seems like it, yeah.
And it's like, you know, y'all can call Hank Aaron the home run king, but he's not because
right. – mm-hmm.
None of that has been taken away.
Yeah.
None of that has been erased from the record book, and there's no asterisk by his name either.
Yeah, I'll put an asterisk by the Chiefs Super Bowl because they called the hold on the Eagles' corner. Okay, fine, you can do that, but the Chiefs are still your Super Bowl champions.
You can do it in your own mind, but that's not a real thing.
You can live in your alternative world if you want to, and if you're comfortable there, then stay there. How's that? Dominant team in college softball, Oklahoma. They prove they're human.
Ground ball to Langliers. And Louisiana has done it as they defeat the Oklahoma Sooners 7-5, and the 71-game win streak comes to an end.
It does. Oklahoma finally loses in softball. First time since February of last year. They're now 18-1 on the season. 71-game winning streak is snapped. Louisiana improved to just 10-12. They rallied to tie it, forced the extra innings, and ended up winning over Oklahoma. Give you an update on the Royals. Bobby Witt Jr. hit his first home run of the spring the other day. The Royals doing well in spring training, like they usually do. They went over the Reds 7-3, and they are 8-3 at spring training. Down in Surprise, Arizona, and Brady Singer on the hill tonight at 7:05 against tomorrow night against the Chicago Cubs. So the Royals do not play a game today, but they're 8-3 so far. And Daniel Lynch got the win yesterday for the Royals. And you look at the Royals starting rotation, and you have to sit here and say, okay, well, it's Lugo, it's Waka, it's Singer, it's Lyles is going to have a spot. Who am I leaving out? Is Lynch going to be the fifth starter?
Could be.
He could be. I'm trying to think if there's another guy I'm forgetting.
Yeah, because
Zach Greinke's not on
the team.
You
mentioned the two new guys from the Padres.
Right, Brady Singer,
yeah.
Jordan Lyles.
It's Reagans.
Oh, Reagans, duh.
Yeah.
Wow, how do I leave
it like,
out?
I had to go
I knew
again
I was
with
missing
who you
one.
Said.
I knew I was missing one. Reagans is right now your number one.
Yeah.
Your number two is, I'm going to say, probably Lugo. Your number three is either Walker or Singer, and then your four is Walker or Singer, and then Lyles is your five, or Lynch.
Yeah, I
Lynch,
actually,
I love that. I love to have Lynch be my five, but he just never has been able to be consistent enough for staying healthy.
And then last year he had injuries, and actually more than just last year, but last year was the one that really kind of took him out because of the injury. But
I just wonder what Lynch's role is on this team. If they've got the money tied up in Lyles, Waka, and Lugo, and you got Reagans who's your ace, it looks like, and then Singer, I think we'll have a bounce back year this year. So there's not a spot in the rotation. And that's a great problem to have, because in the past years we're like, God, we need Bubic to be our four and Lynch needs to be our two.
Yeah.
And Greinke's got to be our three. And then we don't know who we got for five. Like, so they've definitely addressed that.
Greinke is opening day starter last year.
Yeah.
It's rough.
Right. Greinke, by the way, hasn't announced his retirement, but he hasn't signed with anybody either.
Yeah.
Somebody said he should re-sign with the Royals, let him come out of the pen, or give him a few spot starts, and once he gets to 3,000 Ks, then you just say congratulations and let him call it a career.
Yeah.
I don't think Zach will do that.
No, probably not. I don't think he cares enough to do that.
No, I don't think so either.
About the 3,000.
Now, if he wants to play, then he'll
play. If he actually had the urge to and wanted to scratch the itch and actually did want to play, I think he would, but the number part of it's not, I don't think that's a factor in his decision.
You know, the way Zach is, he may just never announce he retires.
I don't think he will. I think he'll just quit, and because he's not going to want the fanfare around it, right? Like, he's not going to want like some big ceremony saying, hey, yeah, I retired. And I think that there's a reason why he didn't do like say this was his final farewell tour or anything last year, right?
Yeah.
And so, no, I actually agree with you, and I actually think he will just be like, no, I'm done. I just wrote up. I just, unless he's going to be like Bernie Mac and Mr. 3000, you know, come back 7 or 8 years later. But no, I just, I think you're right. I don't think he's going to say anything about it.
No, I don't think so either. A couple of notes here real quick, too. Jason Kelce, center for the Eagles, going to have a press conference today at noon. I would expect that to be a retirement announcement officially. Mike Evans apparently is going to stay with the Buccaneers on a two-year deal worth $25 million a year, which is way more than the Chiefs should pay for a wide receiver. So it looks like he's going to stay in Tampa. And then they got to get Baker Mayfield taken care of because they had a pretty good combination. And they were on the same wavelength a lot. They had a good year working together, Mike Evans and Baker Mayfield. And in the NBA, it was supposed to be a marquee matchup between the Celtics and the Warriors. And the Celtics were up by 44 at halftime and go on to win by 52, 140-88. NBA basketball, it is fantastic. High school basketball is fantastic, especially for three area teams that are moving on. Once again, Beloit boys will play at 2 o'clock on Wednesday from the Sports Arena Hutchinson. They are the 1 seed against Topeka, an 8 seed. But once again, as we established, this is not your typical 8 seed. Should be a tough game there for Beloit, but definitely winnable. But could go either way, I think. Of course, any game could go either way. But there is no doubt that this is a little bit of a different type of matchup for a 1-8. And then Beloit will play at 2, pregame 1:40 on Wednesday. We'll have it for you on Katie Country 94, Katie Country 94. St. John's Tipton boys will play at 6 o'clock pregame at 5:40 on Wednesday on Katy Country 94 as they'll take on Axtell. St. John's Tipton girls will play Thursday, 7:40 pregame, 8 o'clock approximate tip time as they will battle Sharon Springs. All three of the games on Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com. Get the free Katy Country 94 app on your smartphones. And if you didn't know, this changed a few years back, but the state tournament games are no longer 3:45, 6:38, 15. They are 2, 4, 6, 8, which there is a lot of dead time sometimes between these games, but for a media people, it helps us, no doubt, to get our stuff done, have a real full post-game show, and then other people slide in after us. And it allows more time for the fans to disperse and bring in the new fans, although some of the arenas are big enough, it's not a big deal. Manhattan's not a host this year.
Yeah.
Seems weird, doesn't it?
There's a lot.
Because where's 2A's?
2A's in Dodge.
Or Dodge. Yeah. And 1A, Division 1 is Colby. Yeah. Which Colby, that's got a great facility, as I know from the Orange Black Classic. So it's good that they're hosting.
Yeah, the facility is outstanding.
Yeah, absolutely.
The
travel, too.
The travel, too, and the rest of whatever you're going to do while you're not playing basketball.
Yeah. Yeah.
Listen, I lived
There's
in
not
Colby
a big casino there in Colby.
I lived in Colby for 2 years. I loved it. I loved my time at Colby Community College, but there was not a lot to do unless I'm going to a trailer park and hanging out with my buddies.
It wasn't much to do unless I went to the trailer park. That sounds funny.
I said that on purpose like that. All buddy lived in a trailer park, in a trailer house while we were in school.
Anybody live in a van down by the river?
I did that on purpose. I'm sorry, Colby. I really do love you. But it's just...
Well, I like Waukini, too, but not much to do
and
there
I'm just, there's not a lot to do in Great Bend either, to be completely honest with you. I don't think it's any different than Colby from that aspect.
Yeah.
Dodge City, there's casino and there's historic stuff.
Yes,
you can go
right.
If you've not been, you can go down to Boot Hill and all those that area and all that. But there's
right.
There's not that in Colby. I'm going to tell you that right now. You can go to the Oasis on the Plains and see the visitor center it'll take you maybe 45 minutes, but there's not much else.
Yeah.
Other than that.
Yeah, so if you got a long trip from one
part
of the
facilities,
state.
Outstanding.
Yes.
I've not been there yet, but you
nice.
Obviously have.
Yeah,
I've been meaning to get to a game there and check it out, but it just hasn't worked for me.
Yeah. All right, so enjoy all that. All the brackets posted at nckssports.com and our broadcast schedule as well. Sports Ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.